Coffee with Cudmore.
Light 104.7 and 1570 AM WVTL.
Time for stories from the Mohawk Valley. Today's stories by Richard Peters and Tom Peichel. Richard Peters of Amsterdam will go first. He submitted a document written by his grandfather, William Rosa of Gloversville, a German prisoner of war in World War II. We'll hear that in just a few seconds. And then Tom Peichel of Amsterdam and France wrote an essay about snow days on Park Hill in Amsterdam when he was a young child.
We'll meet again. Don't know where, don't know when, but I know we'll meet again some sunny day.
Rich Peters, who's a history teacher at the middle school in Amsterdam, seventh grade at the Lynch Academy, submitted a document to our Stories from the Mohawk Valley contest, and the document is what his grandfather wrote about being held captive by the Nazis during World War II. I've subsequently taken a look at the document, talked with Rich Peters, and come up with a story, which I hope will run soon in a Focus on History in the Daily Gazette. Well, it won't run this Saturday, but will run a week from Saturday in the Gazette. So, unlike practically all the other stories I'm reading, this is not written by Rich Peters. This was written by moi, but it's based on the documents that Rich Peters sent from his grandfather, and I titled the story Prisoner of War. Private William Bill Rosa from Gloversville and his infantry patrol were pinned down by German machine gun crossfire in Nancy, France on September 22nd, 1944. Rosa had arrived in France earlier that month. He wrote, "We dropped into German trenches for protection when snipers began picking off our men in the squad one at a time." Rosa was hit by fragments from a German grenade. Three more Americans were killed. Rosa wrote, "The corporal in charge thought it would be in the best interest of the survivors to surrender to the two German captives which we were holding in the trenches. From the trenches, we were taken to a country schoolhouse by truck where we were held overnight. The Allies bombed the school during the night. None of the prisoners was hurt. The next morning, the prisoners were taken by truck to prison camp 12A, which was about 50 miles from Frankfurt, Germany. After a week, they were put into a boxcar of a train and taken to a location nearer to Berlin. They were given very little water, plus one meal a day, a watery soup made from spoiled vegetables. They stayed on the boxcar for 8 days. The train was strafed by American planes." Rosa then was shipped to a prison camp near Munich, Germany, and sent daily on work parties where, among other jobs, he sacked and delivered potatoes. Rosa said, 90% of the population of Munich were prisoners, either POWs or slave labor. Rosa first was reported missing in action. His family was told just before Thanksgiving that he was being held as a prisoner of war. The Americans were housed with political prisoners. Rosa described his compound's guard as a humane veteran of World War I, but SS troops with dogs guarded the political prisoners. That winter, Rosa alternated working his job. Sometimes he worked on the railroad. Sometimes he worked at a concentration camp. There was little food, and what meat they received was horse meat. Rosa wrote, "One time I found a horse's tooth in my soup." During air raids, prisoners took shelter in a brewery cellar, but sometimes were pushed out. Rosa said a sadistic guard once beat the prisoners during an air raid. Quote, "I was hit square in the back with his rifle butt, causing painful and permanent injury." Orders came to eliminate the prisoners. Instead, the POWs were forced to march 31 miles towards Salzburg and put on a train. Along the way, the train was strafed, but the guards allowed the prisoners to leave the train, take shelter along the track. none of the prisoners was hit. Rosa wrote, "The planes were so close we could make out the features of the pilots." The prisoners were taken to a small town named St. Johann in Austria, about 15 miles from the Nazi high command retreat in Berchtesgaden. Rosa contracted pneumonia, and there was no medical care. By May, Rosa wrote, the war was ending. "The guards had been ordered to shoot all the POWs," he said, continuing his quote, "however, they refused and simply left us in the camp." The 101st Airborne Division liberated Rosa's camp on May 8th. He was taken to a field hospital. He was honorably discharged from the Army in December 1945 and awarded a Purple Heart. Back in Gloversville, Bill Rosa worked as a plumber. He and his wife Ruth raised their two daughters, Susan and Janice. Susan's son, Amsterdam middle school history teacher Richard Peters, submitted his grandfather's account of 8 months as a POW during my stories from the Mohawk Valley contest. Rosa wrote down the information for an application for a POW medal back in the 1980s. Bill Rosa died January 4th, 2007. He was 88 years old.
We'll meet again. Don't know where, don't know when, but I know we'll meet again some sunny day. Keep smiling through, just like you always do, till the blue skies drive the dark clouds far away. So will you please say hello to the folks that I know, tell them I won't be long. They'll be happy to know that as you saw me go, I was singing this song. We meet again, don't know where, don't know when, but I know we'll meet again some sunny day.
That is Vera Lynn and a well-known song from World War II. Stories from the Mohawk Valley. I'm Bob Cudmore on WVTL-FM. Our next story has to do with wintertime.
Walking in a winter wonderland.
We really haven't had much of a winter, but Tom Peichel, who lives in Amsterdam and Burgundy, France, submitted this essay about snow days when he was young. Snow, that cold, frozen white stuff. It can surprise you, falling out of the sky in innumerable miniature crystals of ice, no two exactly the same, they say. The laden clouds, unseen overhead, blow in to release their frigid contents that sift out and drift slowly down to gradually form a wide and deepening white mantle all around us here, where twin creeks join the Mohawk from south and north, the double Choctanundas just downstream from the larger Schoharie. Many see it as a foe, a whitish substance to be scraped, plowed, or salted away while avoiding coronary distress or a bad fall. Others, however, await it impatiently. Those who ski, snowmobile, snowshoe, or simply enjoy the chilly, fanciful metamorphosis of land and cityscape. When I was growing up on Park Hill, Amsterdam in the 50s, an especially snowy night was the herald of a fantastic possibility. Schools closing the next day. I would go off to sleep in hopeful anticipation of good news the next morning. Once awake in my bed, I could hear the radio in the kitchen and prayed that enough snow had fallen so the announcer would say in his litany of the lucky that all Amsterdam district schools are now closed. Your birthday, Christmas morning, and the first day of summer vacation were exciting, but you knew for sure when they would arrive, A snow day, however, had the charm and magic of the unpredictable. The euphoria wasn't shared by all parents whose children would remain at home, nor by people who had to get to work. Ignoring this, I gleefully foresaw the day's activities as I entered the stove-warmed kitchen for breakfast. No school outfit was out this morning, but my winter play clothes were there on the rocker. A fun time was awaiting me in the backyard, and if it was good packing, that was icing on the cake. A snowman, a snow fort, a snowball fight with friends, a tunnel, an igloo. Outside at last, looking up toward the gray sky, there was the wonder of the cold, tiny bite of that first fat flake to hit your stuck-out tongue, while others touched your cheeks or gathered on your clothes, and the first mouthful of snow melted slowly to flow coldly down your throat. Back in the kitchen, fingers and toes that tingled and stung from the cold now throbbed uncomfortably, but getting so frozen and wet were more than made up for by a cup of hot chocolate, beanie socks, gloves and pants set to dry in a radiator or draped over the open hot oven door. Then it was outside again, after the sensual feel of slipping back into the now dry and toasty warm clothes. Many heavy winter storms hit back then, and I recall occasions when there were several days of no school in a row. Ah, how the distant childhood pleasures of those snow days from so long ago delight me to this very winter's day. Stories from the Mohawk Valley, that one by Tom Peichel of Amsterdam in Burgundy, France, and the story about the prisoner of war from World War II, William Rosa. The information provided by Richard Peters, who's a teacher in Amsterdam. I do believe he was going to have his class listen this morning, his 7th grade history class. A shout out to those guys. On Stories from the Mohawk Valley tomorrow, Michael Sargalis with memories of downtown Amsterdam, also the Teepee restaurant in the East End, and one of our top 10 winners, the story from Diane Smith of Amsterdam, about her grandfather, Carl August Johnson, a Swedish immigrant who drove one of the first motor cars in Amsterdam. All the stories from the Mohawk Valley submitted in my recent contest by the book that started it all, my history book, Stories from the Mohawk Valley, available everywhere, signed copies at the Old Peddler's Wagon on Church Street and at the Bookhound, East Main Street in Amsterdam.